The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinkin' Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast. Featuring
Fillmore's finest, Monte Hill.
All right, oh baby, it's Tuesday morning in the Bay Area. Hopefully you're driving safe, and hopefully the traffic cleared up on 101 North just past the airport. It was a nasty, nasty accident. I'm not sure what exactly happened, but it was brutal this morning. But hopefully everybody is safe, all the teachers, all the students, all the high schools getting ready for state championships this weekend. Who else do we got? Of course, the overnight dancers. I don't know how business is during the holidays, but hopefully you're making some money. Shout out to Laughing Mug Brewing, December 20th, Doobie Awards. You want to be there, take the day off. It's a celebration of life, celebration of the station, celebration of the Doobie Awards. I had to say that. Absolutely, I had to say it. Baldy just joined us. Doug Russell, my guy Doug Russell from out there in Milwaukee. Milwaukee is going to join us at 9:20 to get to know Willie Adames. He texted me last night. Really likes a player, said great things about him, so he'll join us at 9:20. He's from 97.3, the game in Milwaukee. We will get to some Warriors. I know you'll keep teasing Warriors. We'll get to the Warriors, man, because there's a lot to get to here. But Shasky, good morning to you, man. What's going on?
Good morning. There's so much to get into. Obviously, the baseball world is buzzing. We'll get to that in a little bit. Giants making big moves. Sounds like Nolan Arenado's on the move. Yeah, the stuff that Baldy said is hitting me this morning pretty hard. I mean, he's basically talking about wide receivers and how they don't win you Super Bowls. Like, we all agree, like, you got to have some competent players out there. But it does feel like the majority of the Super Bowls in our life, they're won and lost in the trenches and with the quarterbacks. Right?
No doubt.
Of course you got to have playmakers. You got to have a Julian Edelman, and you got to have an elite tight end out there. Like, it feels like that's kind of like the unlocker, whether it's a Gronk, whether it's a Kelsey, et cetera. But you got to have competent playmakers. No one denies that. But I kind of feel him on this, and this is where we go back to team building, and I look at the 49ers' strategy on team building, which made a lot of sense on paper. But, like, when you're a team that's a run-first team, to spend $60 to $75 million on four wide receivers, when you really only target any one of them on a given game like 4.5-5 times, it isn't the greatest business model. Unless you have rookie great linemen.
Are we gonna start turning wide receivers into running backs where you just don't pay them top dollar?
Well, I'm a little more discerning on, like, we had this long, like, offseason with Brandon Ayuk, for example, where I think everyone agreed, like, he's a really good player. Like, we all agreed. I don't, you know, anyone who said he's garbage is like, oh, come on, I'm not taking you serious. But he's a really good player. But the question wasn't, like, is he really good? It's like, does he fit what the Niners want to do? And is it sound team-building strategy to pay him what he was asking on this team, knowing how this coach wants to play football? And it was like, well, maybe there'll be an evolution in how they play football. Nah, they're going to always run the ball first. And they're going to be a pass second kind of a team in terms of how they right. want to win. And so, like, I don't think it was great money spent. And I wanted to keep him, too. Like, I'm contradicting myself. Like, I wanted to keep him. But, like, now knowing what I know, it's like, Jennings in the fold the whole time.
Well, they should have given him the money from the start. But to Baldy's point that you don't win Super Bowls with wide receivers, you don't know what quarterbacks are churches. And, yeah, there's no doubt you have to control the churches. But you're telling me that you don't need playmakers either? And that's where I kind of push back with Baldy. I watched Cooper Kupp dominate and win the Super Bowl MVP against the Cincinnati Bengals. Dominate. The one wide receiver out there, no Odell Beckham Jr., and he went out there and dominated. We've seen Rice and John Taylor many, many years. We've seen Michael Irvin many, many years and Alvin Harper. We've seen great wide receivers. Who knows? Spadoni, during the break, he was just talking about the Tampa Bay offense that gets no love. Brady, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. Wow, Rob Gronkowski at tight end. I mean, who's who? We also saw the NFC Championship game in which Kyle Williams, it'll be remembered for Kyle Williams fumbling. You know what else I remember for? Being 1-for-13 on third down because you had no playmakers on the outside. So they may not win Super Bowls, but damn it, you need a playmaker in the passing game and you need some elite wide receivers to stay in football games. I would push back on that. I think you do need wide receivers.
Team is a great example, actually. Like Mario Manningham comes to mind. He wasn't elite. He made a couple of really big plays, you know, for them. And your point about
Hakeem Nicks was really, really good.
Sure.
Hakeem Nicks was really, really good.
I don't think anyone would, like, put him in a top 25 of the last 10 or 15 years.
But during that era, during that year, Hakeem Nicks was like a top 10 wide receiver.
Okay.
He was. He not? He was legit. Hakeem Nicks was legit for that short
player.
Period of time.
He was a good
for
player.
The New York Giants. Wasn't he a first-round pick, too? I mean, he was legit.
I don't know. I remember that Super Bowl for the Rams versus Cincinnati as more of a defensive struggle. Yes, Odell Beckham and Cooper Kupp were awesome. But to get there, I thought it was Aaron Donald in that fourth quarter taking over.
Well, Cooper Kupp won Super Bowl MVP.
No, I know. But I'm saying I remember the 49ers with Aaron Donald.
And then the 49ers, Cooper Kupp couldn't be guarded. I mean, watching him in the slot just cook Kawan Williams for the game-time touchdown. I mean, but Cooper Kupp was dominant. Their wide receivers were dominant. I disagree that if you go out there with just some media, like Julian Edelman, it turned out to be an awesome wide receiver and made plays. You need playmakers outside. Yes, you need the trenches. You need a good quarterback. You need a good defense. But I still think you need playmakers on the outside. You know, I get playmakers on the outside. All of a sudden, you can't take the top off the defense. All of a sudden, the defense is playing 15 yards within the line of scrimmage. All of a sudden, the defense is like, yeah, we ain't worried about anything outside. We're going to just stuff the run and play 8 in the box and just slam it. So, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Well, I think where he's going is like, yeah, you could be an important player on the team, but I think that there's a disproportionate amount of money being spent on the wide receiver position in general league-wide, and I do believe there tends to be a personality type that is more team disruptor than team lubricator in terms of, like, gelling everyone and getting everyone on the same page. Like, there is a consistent theme. One position complains, it feels like, more than maybe the other ones publicly. And I think that's where he was kind of going at, like, you know, like I look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Like they moved off of Tyreek Hill. They won a championship with him, but they moved off of Tyreek Hill, who's one of the best players in the entire league, and they got lesser players on the outside, and they still found a way to win because of Chris Jones and Patrick Mahomes and other things.
Travis Kelce, who's a wide receiver.
Kelsey's all time.
Travis Kelce, too. So when you have a Travis Kelce, it's easier to move off of a Tyreek Hill to fix your books, reset your books, to say, all right, we have this great quarterback in Patrick Mahomes who's going to elevate lesser talent outside. Now, I don't think we're there yet with Brock Purdy. I don't think we're there at all with Brock Purdy yet. But you have a Patrick Mahomes, which is an outlier, right? When you have a Tom Brady, it's an outlier. When you could have lesser weapons outside. So,
but I also believe, like, and this is more of a function of the NFL, when you look at, like, in December and in January and then into February, obviously most of the Super Bowls are played in domes, controlled environments, but you're outdoors in the elements. It's more difficult to throw the ball. I've heard Packer fans complain for years they're a throwing team, yet they play a lot of home games in frigid, below zero temperatures where it's very difficult to throw the ball. And so their number one weapon is kind of neutralized, and then it becomes a trench game. And they've lost a lot of trench games over the last few years.
Yeah, they've been soft up front. They've been soft up front. There's no doubt about that. But Julian Edelman was a Super Bowl MVP. I'm just looking at the Super Bowl MVPs here, so I don't know. It depends on how you want to build your team. But I love having me a top-flight playmaker. Let's go to Bay Rob. Bay Rob, what's happening? You're on the roast.
Top of the morning, Bonte and Butcher Boy.
What's up, man?
Hey, I'm just like you. I agree with Baldy, but at the same time, I disagree with Baldy. I keep telling you, Bonte, everybody know we have a NASCAR running back. They know we got a NASCAR tight end, but they know we don't have NASCAR receivers. They know this. Debo them can barely beat people one-on-one, bro. You know what I'm saying? Yep. They can barely beat people one-on-one. That's a problem for Purdy. That's why Purdy don't, you know what I'm saying? That's a problem for Purdy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to have trust in somebody to beat somebody one-on-one. If you know that's going to happen, you go throw the ball. Look at Chase last night. You think Burrow worried about Chase? He's willing to risk an interception to throw the ball to Chase. That's how much confidence he has in Chase. So until we get them NASCAR receivers, bro, ain't nothing going to change. What John Madden say on the commercial of the John Madden thing? He said speed's key, right? Mm-hmm. Look at everybody who got speedy wide receivers. Look at Detroit. Detroit got heat. Look at the L.A. Rams. L.A. Rams got heat. Look at Seattle. Seattle got heat. Everybody who got these receivers that could scare you got a chance to win the game. They have a shot. You know what I'm saying? People just go keep circling around us, making a bubble, and waiting for us to make the mistakes that we make and turn over the ball. And they're going to stack that box for Christian McCaffrey and all our running backs who get killed because right. They're waiting on them.
Right. No, good points, Bayrock.
Ain't nothing going to change, dude.
Yeah, good points, Bayrock. Look, from my philosophy, when I team build, if I'm running the franchise on Madden, I love linemen. Defensive linemen, offensive linemen. I remember I got talked to by the boss many, many moons ago. Hey, you're talking too much offensive line. Offensive line, nobody cares about it. But I do, because I think offensive linemen are the key to your offense functioning at a high level. Your quarterback can have success if he doesn't get time to throw the ball. Your running backs can have success if linemen aren't blowing holes open, left or right against defensive linemen. The defensive linemen. Your linebackers are not running around making 150 tackles a season if your defensive line is not stabilizing the front. Your quarters, you know, they don't want to guard for 7 seconds. You need a D-line to get after the quarterback. So my team building philosophy has always been up front. I like offensive linemen, defensive linemen. It's not sexy at all, but I start from there. But with that said, you need playmakers out. You need some great skill positions. And to Bayrod's point, you look at Detroit, they invested in Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't think anybody's batting an eye on whether or not he's worth every penny. They invested a first-round pick in Jamison Williams coming off a torn ACL at Alabama, knowing that he may not be ready his rookie year. They still invested. You see the Eagles and their investments out wide. And yeah, they're complaining and bitching right now, but they'll figure it out. They have Saquon Barkley, and you know what? Teams are scared to death. Reason why Saquon Barkley's going crazy right now? Well, teams can't go 7 in the, they can't go 8 in the box because you got A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. So, hey, look, they may not single-handedly win because you need a quarterback to throw them the ball, but I think having a top-flight wide receiver is very vital to being a contender
for sure.
In the NFL.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we'll see with Jameson when he hits free agency because I believe he's supposed to be a free agent. He got suspended for gambling. There's been a lot. Yeah, he's had a good year.
He's got a couple years.
You know, and then you have Tim Patrick, who's had a monster year as well, who's kind of like their third guy. And, you know, they've – so we'll see. We'll see what they end up doing. But I just think the majority of what Baldy is getting at is that – they complain a lot. They get paid an exorbitant amount of money. And when it's, you know, crunch time late in the year, it does feel like, you know, more players on the field are making more of an imprint on the game. Not that they're not needed. It's just that, you know, like that Super Bowl. We came away from that Super Bowl. I think we talked a lot about wide receiver. The Niners went out and drafted a wide receiver. Really, it was like, yeah, the quarterback play could be a little better. And in the trenches, they got dominated on both ends. You know, they couldn't get stops when they needed to in the second half, the Niners. Offensively, they couldn't block up front. And they had tons of miscommunications. And they doubled down on wide receiver, and they haven't had a great year. And I think if they would have doubled down maybe on some offensive line or maybe an edge rusher or something like that in the draft instead, it might have behooved them a little better this year.
Yeah, I just... the targets, yeah, we talked all about it. And the one guy who did get off press, man, was the guy who wasn't getting paid right away and then finally got paid. Now he's out for the season. That's Brandon Ayuk. So it's a very interesting conversation. Let's go to he's not ready yet. Where's the Baldy cut here? Baldy, all right, call it out, Debo. A wide receiver's complaining about targets. Here it is.
These receivers that do this, I'm taking a shot here at Debo, but honestly, nobody wins the Super Bowl because of the receivers. Nobody. You they help you, but they don't. You win the game because your quarterback and your defense. Your quarterback helps the receivers. But T.O., Randy Moss, I mean, you go through the list of great receivers that we've seen in this league. They don't win Super Bowls. The Eagles won a Super Bowl 7 years ago. They didn't have a receiver that had 1,000 yards receiving. They didn't have a running back that had 1,000 yards. But they were a great team. So you win 24-0 for the first time. You got a lead last week. Like, and you couldn't win a game for a month. Like, just take the win. Take the win. The Thursday night, national TV. You got the Rams. They beat you earlier this year. Go do something to help win the game against the Rams. Throw a block for Garendo that springs them. Like, just do the little things. Like, the ball will come your way.
I think a lot of Niner fans are hearing that, and they're like, yeah, like 100%. Like, we haven't won in however many weeks. We're explosive, and yeah, I want everyone to ball out every single week, but, like, that game was in hand. We had all the, like, Brandon Allen came into that game with like 8 minutes to go. You know, we went all rooks and all random backups at the end. Why are we coming out of a game we finally won and we looked awesome and we're worried about who's touching it and where we're getting? Like, come on, guys. Like, the season's falling away here. Like,
season's already gone. Let's be real. Does anybody out there really believe?
Hope, though.
Does anybody, like, that's where I want to get to. Does anybody really believe that this team has a shot? A shot to make the playoffs? Like, I feel like the season is shot. I do. I just, you got Miami, you got Detroit, you got Arizona. With the way the season has played out and everything, it just feels like a lost year. The Omens have been there staring at us in the face, starting in training camp. Should have known it the minute Chris McCaffrey came up with a calf injury. Hell, the first practice, you see Isaac Garrido pop his hamstring. Elijah Mitchell doesn't even get on the field. What? I would love to hear 888-957-9570 from Niner fans who truly believe that they could spark a rally and get into the playoffs. Now, those guys in the locker room believe. They don't believe they're dead. Kyle Shanahan doesn't believe they're dead. But I'm watching the team, and I'm watching around the league, and I'm saying to myself, yeah, I don't know. I don't see it. I just don't see
it. What's changed for you? Because 3 weeks ago, heading into Green Bay, you felt very optimistic.
Well, heading into the Seattle game. It was the Seattle game. Once they lost to Seattle, and they're going on the road, and Brock Purdy doesn't play against Green Bay, it's like, yeah, this is going to be very difficult. Because the Buffalo game was a nail. That was a nail the minute the schedule got released back in March. So once they lost to Seattle at home in the way that they did, and we talked about it on the show, yeah, it's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Mathematically, you're still in it. But then all of a sudden, Seattle's winning games. The Rams are winning games. So, yeah, we're deeper into the season. We're in December. You're two games behind Seattle. They've only got one division loss. The Niners have three division losses. I'm sorry, Niner fans. I'm not the one to sell fake hope. I'm not going to do that to you. Now, you can be optimistic all you want to. I'm not deterring anybody away from doing that. But I just don't see it.
Normally,
too many injuries.
No, I think most people don't see it. We haven't seen it for a while, but like, this team's played poor football, especially in crucial situations, for a long time. That's why, again, why Sunday was so like alarming. It's like, where's this been? You know? And so, but like, in normal situations, I'm like, tank, pack it all in. And there are certain guys like Nick Bosa, probably not going to see him the rest of the year. That's just my guess. Probably going to get some sort of a surgery. Maybe at some point when they're mathematically eliminated, Fred Warner bows out. But, you know, normally I'd say, yeah, get the better draft pick. I kind of want to see them play this thing out. Like, I want to see some of these guys play hard down the stretch. I kind of don't want to see certain guys pack it in. I think all the smack talk and all the money and everybody squeezing us in the offseason for every single penny, there's a part of me as a fan where I put my hard-earned money in this team. I'm kind of like, you owe it to me to work this thing out and kind of play hard down the stretch. I'm not saying you got to win every one of these games, but don't just give me a bunch of backups the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, I don't think effort level's been a problem. I haven't taken away losses saying, boy, that's a lack of effort. Boy, they're not playing hard. It's been a lack of execution, in my opinion. A lack of execution. Third down defense. Execution. Not getting off the football field. Converting field goals into points. Lack of execution. Not making field goals.
Sucks, Monte. Like, yeah. They whiffed on that pick. It's okay. Like, they whiffed on Trey Lance. They whiffed on Jake Moody.
Why are you coming at me like that?
Pick. No, I'm just saying in general. That pick has been horrible.
He did suffer an ankle injury. I mean, maybe his ankle's not right. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on. But lack of execution by players that you paid, that's been my biggest issue. I think they've played hard. I've seen effort. I've seen a lot of effort. Look at these games that they've lost. The Rams game, they had a fourth quarter lead. The Cardinals game, they had a fourth quarter lead. The Seahawks game, they had a fourth quarter lead. It wasn't because of effort. I mean, they had the effort, but the lack of execution let them down to the fourth quarter. So I'm not buying the fact that they haven't played hard. Ike and Hayward, what's up?
Hi. Yeah, I've been a 49er fan for a long time, and I think they've missed the playoffs maybe five times since I've been a fan. So, yes, I expect them to make the playoffs. I expect them to get further in the playoffs. Just because they had a few injuries, I don't give up on the season.
Wait, what's that? So you spent more hold on, Ike, stay there. You spent more time on the phone with Sam Lubman than you have making
a phone
call.
He doesn't expect them to just give up on the season, and I kind of agree with him on that.
Who says they're going to give up on the season?
Well, I think when these things happen, the teams start circling the drains. You know, the quote-unquote business decisions are made about availability.
Guys are playing for contracts and future jobs. This is why this goes back to 2021. I hate to bring this up. But you brought up Trey Lance just saying about the whiff pick. And I remember that season. A lot of people, they beat the Texans in a do-or-die game. The Niners don't win that game in 2021 against the Houston Texans. They don't go to the playoffs, and they don't advance to the NFC Championship games against the LA Rams. And I remember I was saying it in real time on the show that week. I said, look, we could laugh at the Texans and say they're terrible, and they were terrible. But guys were also putting things on tape for future employers. They're trying to get a job in the future with other franchises if they don't get retained by the Houston Texans. So they're going to get maximum effort from that team. There's a lot of teams that, even the Jaguars and Titans, for crying out loud, not a lot of people watch that game. Those guys are playing hard because your future contracts, your future money is on the line. So I do not anticipate the Niners just melting in under Kyle Shanahan. I've never seen that from them. Even during the COVID year, when they had to play in Glendale, Arizona, they beat the Cardinals down there. Remember they beat the Cardinals? They played their asses off. They lost to Washington that year, but they played hard. I never questioned the effort of a Kyle Shanahan-led team.
I think where I'm now illuminated is that George Kittle was the one questioning, not Joe Shasky, not Rob and Sam Bruno or whoever who calls in, like not someone on the internet, like the one of the primary players on this team.
I just think it's just a player at a podium. You know how many times Steph Curry has walked up to a podium and said, yeah, we need to play with more urgency, blah, blah, blah. It's not an indictment on the team not playing hard. It's just we need to play desperate. That's the same thing I got from George Kittle. I actually think this quote is being blown out of proportion here. Here's George Kittle on the team finally playing with desperation.
I think the message was we need to play with more of a sense of urgency and play desperate because you just haven't really sensed that. And like, I've been on teams where it felt like, was it 2 years ago we were on an whatever, like 8-9 game win streak, whatever that was. And it literally felt like every play people were just scratching, clawing and fighting for everything. And I'm not going to call anybody out. Like we've all not taken a playoff, but like, you know, just not fought our hardest on every given play. And that was kind of the message, like, guys, just put it all out there because we have the players, we have the playmakers, we have the play call, and we have everything to win games, but like we have to do it out of desperation. And when you're playing desperate and you're playing like, hey, if we don't win this game, our season potentially is over, that desperation fuels guys in different ways, and it's just how you take that and how you channel that energy. And I thought our guys did a great job of that today.
So I to me, the way I interpret it, and I could be completely off here, but sitting in a lot of pressers in my life, I've heard that message before. Yeah, we got to play with desperation. We got, you know, we're not playing with much desperation. We're not playing with urgency. We're not doing, and I don't buy that. I think the Niners did play hard. They just got their asses kicked in Buffalo and Green Bay. They just got beat by better teams.
Yeah, I don't know. When I see George Kittle the week before complaining about the touches that he gets, the amount of routes that he's running, I don't know. I think you're getting a candid version of Kittle these last couple of weeks, and I think his leadership is emerging.
Those are two different things, though. He's saying, I need to be involved more in the offense.
When has he ever said that?
Well, he's probably kind of alluded to it. It's like, yeah, you know, I'm running blocking, blah, blah, blah. So he's right, though, especially without Ayuk and without Chris McCaffrey. He should be seeing 10 targets a game. Should be, but I don't know. I think it's much ado about nothing. Maybe I'm wrong there. That's just me. All right, more coming up in the game brought to you by Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
Jonathan Kuminga. You're listening to The Morning Roast with Bonte Hill and Josh Askey on 95.7 The Game. Take it away, Bonte.
All right, JK, we'll get to you in just a second. Hell of a game from you on Sunday. Big win for the Warriors, 14-9. They'll get ready for the Emirates NBA Cup, flying down to H-Town today, and then they'll take on the Rockets tomorrow night in the quarterfinal, and the winner advances to the semifinal Saturday in Las Vegas. And I just need to know when the Warriors are going to play after Wednesday. So win or lose, if they win, they play Saturday. I believe if they lose, they will play Sunday against an opponent, TBD. But Shasky, I think we found a Niner fan who still believes they have a shot. Fozzie in the East Bay believes they have a shot. Fozzie, what's happening? Fozzie going once? Going twice? He gone.
Fozzie Bear, was that the Muppets?
Fozzie may have, yes, it was. Fozzie may have believed in the 49ers, but his phone didn't, so it just didn't connect.
There you go. Greg in Oakland.
He tried, though.
Tried. Greg tried. In Oakland.
Stranger things have happened.
Like?
So the night, well, just, they've happened. That's not what I'm calling. I'm calling about Jake Moody.
Oh.
I'm calling about Jake Moody. I'm extremely triggered by Jake Moody because when you look at all the great players that the 49ers find deep in the draft or on the free agent roles, and you look at this season where they brought in two kickers who you could argue were better,
yes,
or at least just as good as Jake Moody, who they found literally on the streets unemployed. It's like, has anybody done a deep dive on the great offensive linemen or defensive linemen that they passed up to take frickin' Jake Moody? I mean, that one, it's, listen, to me, that one is worse than Wiseman on the Warriors or Trey Lance. You know, there was a time when I used to say, which was a worse pick, Wiseman or Trey Lance? The answer, Jake Moody.
Let me ask you this, Greg. How'd you feel after the Super Bowl with Jake Moody?
They missed it.
I'm just asking a question.
Not great. Not great. I mean, listen, I think that those specialists are kind of, I don't want to say they're throwaways. I mean, once in a while, there's a superstar that emerges, but they must have thought that he was like Tucker. Like he was like a guy who was like going to be a Hall of Famer to take him third. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, how did they ever justify that? When they find these great running backs, like Eli Mitchell or even Garendo. Was Garendo, what, a fourth rounder? Like they find these guys on the scrap heap and they turn them into superstars. You know, remember Mostert? Mostert had been cut by like seven teams, Greg, and they found him and they turned him into a really great player.
Greg, I'm not trying to sway you here at all. And I'm not trying to make excuses for the guy, but he has been hurt this year. Last year, this is why. Maybe this year is an outlier. Last year as a rookie, he was 21-25. In terms of field goal makes, 84%. He made all but one extra point. Now, I get it, kickers, and I don't like kickers because they've cost me plenty of money in the past. There's no doubt. He did make the 250-plus yard field goals in the Super Bowl. Greg hung up. I guess he doesn't want to hear it.
Well, but it's not just exclusive. For me, it's not just Jake Moody. It's also Cameron Latu, who was taken like two picks later. It's also, you know, other guys that they took later on in that draft who didn't even make the team. Now, look, you're going to find this in every draft. Puka was in like the fifth or sixth round of that same exact draft. I'm not saying the Niners were going to draft Puka, nor were they going to develop him and utilize him the way the Rams did. But I think when you look at some of the misses in that draft, Jake is highlighted because it is a position. Yeah. Like, I get the point of, hey, if we get the right guy here, we have the right guy for 10 years. Yeah, I understand that thought process. But you hear Baldy telling you, like, literally, it feels like you should never even rent. You should just have all of your clothes in a bag, in a car, ready to go across the country. And guys that they signed off the street who played on four or five different teams this year have been serviceable for a lesser of a draft pick. And I understand allocation and value and all that. And they just missed on it. I don't know. The selection doesn't trigger me as bad as the performance.
No doubt. I'm looking at Jake Elliott. He was a first-round pick. He's struggling. He's been with Philadelphia since 2017. He's had a good career. Tucker's missed a lot of kicks, but he's had a great career. You know, Vinatieri. So if you find the right one, you're fine. I mean, I guess Moody's been down, but, you know, we could say the same about Ricky Pearsall, right? Where people are talking 100%. About Lat McConkey and Keon Coleman and, 100%. You know, first-round picks haven't been great. Javon Kinlaw wasn't great. Solomon Thomas wasn't great. So they've whiffed on a number of picks. Moody hasn't been great. The kickoffs have been very, very disappointing. Special teams as a whole has been a disaster. It's been 100%. A disaster. So,
I mean, every time Cowing just catches it and gets like 2 or 3 yards, I'm like, oh, what a win.
You know, because last year, Moody, we early on in the preseason, we freaked out. Turned out to have a good rookie year. He did. I'm not even trying to cape for him. Trust me, I cannot stand kickers. But he had a solid rookie year. That's all I'm saying.
He was all right. Yeah, he was
21 to 25.
Yeah, but he also cost them a game. You know what I mean?
Last year? Yeah. Oh, yeah, against Cleveland? I mean, okay.
He did.
Yeah, you know, but the offense didn't play great. No, he missed a field goal, and it's tough to see.
That's what the kicker's there for, though.
Yeah, but you know what, though? You can say he cost him a game. It's the same thing like saying Brandon Podziemski cost the Warriors a Denver Nuggets game, and he didn't even play the last 5 minutes.
Well, no, Jake Moody literally had a kick to win the game. There's a difference.
But it shouldn't have came up. It shouldn't have led to that play.
No, but that's right? The whole point of a kicker on your team.
The quarterback didn't play well. P.J. Walker beat you. P.J. freaking Walker. I don't know if this is true or not, but wow. Ali Connolly, he's a newsletter at Read Optional and a writer at The Guardian, saying that Bill Belichick has agreed to become the next UNC head coach. Belichick handed the school a 400-page organizational Bible with structure, payment plans, staffing choices, decisions on whether to commit with UNC. He's expected another decision within 24 hours.
Ooh, and this comes on the heels of 105.3 The Fan in Dallas interviewing Jerry Jones this morning. And Jerry Jones hyping up Bill Belichick. It's been all over ESPN. I think that if I'm Belichick, I'd wait out on that UNC thing and just take a look at what's going on with the Cowboys.
So Bill Belichick negotiations with North Carolina included guarantee that Stephen Belichick will be named the school's head coach in waiting. UNC is open to that guarantee. Discussions are not a bid to gain leverage for NFL offers, and Bill Belichick is open to the move. Interesting stuff.
Well, Bill Walsh finished up his career going back to Stanford, college, but yeah. It was such a different time of collegiate athletics and where Stanford was at as a program, where he was at in his life. And later on, he regretted not going back to the NFL or staying in the NFL longer than he did.
Well, you watched that Super Bowl when they beat Denver, and he started regretting, like, damn, I should be on that sideline. And he knew early on in that game that it was going to be a blowout. And the Niners blew them out. All right, Warriors, real quick. Before we get to Doug Russell at 9:20, we'll talk a little baseball and Willie Adames and who he is as a player. And, of course, we're getting Juan Soto's contract. Interesting stuff Friday night with the Golden State Warriors is Jonathan Kuminga got to start. Draymond Green came off the bench. Now, Draymond Green ended up starting on Sunday. Andrew Wiggins was out. So, if Andrew Wiggins is healthy, very eager to see what the lineup will look like moving forward. But there's been 13 different starting lineups with the Golden State Warriors. However, Draymond Green's post-game was very interesting. As Steph Curry touched on it, Steve Kerr touched on it, about J.K. and passing the torch to Jonathan Kuminga. So I'll start off with Draymond Green. This is after the loss Friday night, which the Warriors scored a season low, 90 points. They committed a season high, 22 turnovers in that game. But after the game, it was about J.K., who struggled at that start. He balled out on Sunday. I think overall had a great week. His Draymond Green on the J.K., conundrum is what I'll call it. The Jonathan Kuminga conundrum.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm sure I'll close most halves. But not starting is not starting, you know? You're taking on a different role. And so, yeah, I don't necessarily look at it as like this demotion. You know, I'm a starter in the NBA. I know that, you know? So, I don't look at it like that. But, you know, if it's something to try to help this team win, I'm always going to be for it, you know? I hate losing. So if you got something that's going to help us win, you're not going to get an argument from me. And as I've always said, I care about this organization. And I know a lot of people in this organization, including myself, think he's next. And so if he's next, at some point we got to see it. And for him to do that, he needs the opportunity. And like I said, if the opportunity falls on you, being me, then that's what it is. And you got to figure it out. And so he's earned. the right to get that opportunity. And when I come back here in 10 years and I'm even more great than I am now, I want to see this franchise thriving. So if he's the guy that's going to do that, which I think he's more than capable of, great. It's perfect.
Let me make it out.
Which part? Because it was like the beginning was hilarious to me. There's this cachet was starting. And this is like the most obvious thing in the world. Like, I'm a starter in the NBA. I know that. Like, of course there's a currency. Like, in terms of NBA players, there is value to being perceived, known, being a starter. Like, that is, and I don't diminish, the closing lineups and things like that, because which is equally important to Draymond Green. But you could tell, like, we better be winning. Because I view myself as a starter, right? And then he's going on and on about Kuminga, and it does feel like they're reaching a point. I don't know if we're necessarily there yet, but there will be some sort of a metaphoric or actual lineup changing of the guard at some point, and Kuminga getting more opportunities at the four, playing at the expense of other players who mean maybe more to the overall Wikipedia page of the Golden State Warriors. Like, there's going to be a point in time where that torch will be fully passed, and I feel like we're in the process of seeing it handed. We're just not 100% there yet.
Not there yet, but it's very interesting as we got trade rumors swirling all today from Shams Charania about Jimmy Butler having Golden State on his list of destinations. Cam Johnson, Dennis Schroeder, Dorian Finney-Smith in Brooklyn. They're on the market with the Brooklyn Nets, and apparently the Warriors are interested in them. So it's very interesting. Here's what Steph said about whether or not he was consulted about J.K. moving to the starting lineup.
Same process with all type of decisions. You give your input. Like I said to Jeannie's question, it's about the culture and the commitment of how we do things. Like, I've come off the bench plenty of times. Draymond's come off the bench. Wiggs, JK, like, everybody's been in that situation where we're trying to figure it out. So who knows how long it'll last? Who knows if it's one game, five, who knows? You know, every day is us trying to figure it out, especially when in a situation we've been in where we start 12-3 and been on a big slide. We got, you know, be all in on that.
And then oncoming is starting. Here's what Curry said about that.
For us to be good, you know, you saw it in the Houston game, you seen flashes. We need him to be the best version of himself. We have to be able to figure out whether it's play calls, whether it's certain rotation or lineup combinations, what can unlock his ability to get downhill, put pressure on the basket, demand attention from the defense, and he's a big weapon for us. So, yeah. And especially the way the early season's gone, you know, games that we've handed away after big leads, you know, tough scoring nights like tonight, you got to, the challenge of this team, we're a different team than we've been the last 3 years. And the experimental phase of trying to unlock new looks, new go-to sets, put the ball in his hands, it's time for that for sure. Because we haven't had results otherwise, so we got to lean into that. And it might not go well every night, but that's what we're trying to build.
So empowering JK and maximizing him felt a little weird in this sense that, yes, sure, you want to maximize JK, but also you want to maximize winning. And does JK help you do that? We saw last week, I thought he had a really good game in Denver, really great game against Houston, taking over down the stretch and being the dude, taking the ball. And we heard from Steph and Dre empowering him like, yo, go get the ball. Go out there and go get the ball and go to the rim and go finish with authority. And he also went 3-6 from the three-point line. But also, watching him Sunday, engaged in that third quarter, defending at a very high level. I thought he was special, but hearing that Steph and Dre trying to pass that torch, saying, Kuminga, we need you. Steph's dealing with the bilateral knee tendonitis. He's 36 years old. He's moving well, but he's seeing long, active defenders. And it's going to be a struggle every night trying to free up Stephen Curry, man. He is the number one, number two, number three option on the Scottie Report. They're trying to take him away, no doubt. And Draymond's dealing with a calf, and he's beat up, and he's had a lot of miles on those legs, and he's banged with these big men in the league for a long, long time. But is it a changing of the guard? Is this what Warrior fans want to see? Kuminga being empowered. And do you trust that Kuminga is capable of taking his franchise into the future as the guy in this franchise? You hear from Dre, you hear from Steph. They've talked All-Stars. They talked about how good he is. But do the fans believe in JK the way Steph and Dre believes in JK? Interesting stuff there.
It's I've waffled so, like, in the, especially in the last, like, 8 months, I've been so back and forth on this. And it feels like there has been a changing of the tide in the last couple of weeks. And I think it's, I go to the Steph and Dre specifically. I think they're actually acknowledging their own mortality. And I'm not saying that they're done. And I'm not saying that they're saying that they're done. But you do see some of the age. Let's say I'm this hypothetical that Steph Curry at his all-time peak was at a 100 overall. What's he at now? 96?
Probably.
All right, and I'm trying, 36. I'm just, we're just spitballing here, right? He's at 96, okay? By year's end, maybe he's at 95, 94, you know? And I think that he's realizing that, like, for this team, there's probably no magic bullet trade that makes them contenders, and he's the number one player on that team, and everything flows through him, and every single piece on that roster has to be catered to how he plays basketball. And I think there is some sort of an acknowledgement of their own mortality as they look at a younger guy who's so far away from being where they're at, but yet they can see, like, if he keeps going forward, it's going to make my game a little easier, and as I start to slowly tick down, okay, he'll make my game a little easier. I'll play a little better alongside of him. He'll start to elevate. His time is coming. It's not now, but his time's coming. I actually like really like what I'm hearing from Dre and Steph because it's very self-aware. And I think that that's one of the things that has been missing the last couple of years. The last couple of years, it's felt like we, the vets, are being let down by the others, the rookies, the other guys, the role players. And now it's like, yeah, we need help. And that's a far cry from where we were a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, yes, where it was all the young guys' fault.
It's very interesting. And just the position of Stephen Curry, because you're right. It felt like, and I think it was more so for the feds, but the youngsters here.
You're probably right.
You know,
it's right.
It's just nauseating at times. Not just even thinking about it.
It was unfair.
It's a headache. It was just like, wow, okay. You know, especially because games were coming down to the wire. Your veterans are in the game down a stretch. It's like last week with Podziemski. I'm like, wait a minute. I get it. Podziemski had a terrible sequence, awful sequence that Steve Kerr called him out. But he also didn't play in the last 5 minutes, and you increased the lead. Once he left, you actually went up 8. So you got to make plays out of stretch. Again, execution. They weren't executing. Feels like the word of the day. Execute, execute, execute. Because I don't think the there's a lack of effort with either Niners or the Warriors. But when it comes to Kuminga, and I'm interested to see what Steve Kerr trots out there tomorrow because Steve Kerr's been on record saying Kuminga's a 4. Draymond Green before the season said he's a 3. Now, I think he's a mix in between. Like, I think Kuminga is just he's a player, right? Possesses basketball. He goes out there and gets you a bucket. He gets to the free throw line. Is he a great 3-point shooter? He's only shooting 31%. Sometimes when he's playing defense, if he's not on the ball, kind of like Klay Thompson back in the day, when he wasn't on the ball, he would get lost off the ball, play a weak side. So that's where J.K. is at defensively. Sometimes he does get lost off the ball. But when he's on the ball, holy smokes, this guy can defend. So I don't know if he's a 4, if he's a 3. I just know the guy can help you win games. And he's a bucket. When you give him the ball and you clear out the section, you get him on the mid post, the guy gets buckets.
Well, I think this is not just a Kuminga question. Like, this is also like a conundrum, excuse me. It's also Steph Curry and Draymond. We all would acknowledge, like, Steph's a very unique player to play alongside, mm-hmm. both on offensive side and the defensive side. And I think the fair other counterpoint is that so is Draymond. Draymond's kind of a tweener. That's kind of what he mm-hmm. came into the league as. People didn't know if he was a 3 or 4. Well, really now the question is he more of a 4 or 5, right? If you play him at the 5, that comes with certain shortcomings because of the wear and tear, and he's not going to be able to match up with every 7-footer the same way. If you play him at the 4, who you play him alongside really matters in terms of spacing and fit on both ends. So, like, part of the conundrum with Kuminga is made a little more difficult because of Draymond specifically and Steph specifically. And, like, I think that that's kind of baked into the whole Kuminga equation. And I just think it's really hard. It's hard to find the right pieces that fit alongside those three players.
Steve Kerr's trying to find the right formula here. Trying to find the right formula without DeAnthony Melton. Now, the trade rumor, and I would love to hear from Warrior fans at 888-957-9570, Sham Sharania this morning saying the Warriors have interest in the Nets trio. The Nets have received trade interest in around forwards Cam Johnson, Dorian Finney-Smith, and guard Dennis Schroeder, who we just saw a couple weeks ago when Brooklyn put it on the Warriors. They went on that monster run, hit a bunch of threes. What, they hit 19 threes in that game, 23?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. They beat Sacramento over the Warriors, and they finished. They had a hell of a week. But Brooklyn, they've got a lot of cap room. $60-plus billion in salary cap space next summer, 12 first-round picks, 11 second-round picks. And, look, they're obviously rebuilding for the future. They traded Mikal Bridges in the offseason to the New York Knicks. Warriors are among the teams that have expressed interest in those three players. 31-year-old Dennis Schroeder having a breakout, having a good season, making $13 million. He's averaging over 18 a game, 6.5 assists. Rival teams believe the Warriors are open to using injured guard D'Anthony Melton's $12.8 million expiring salary, along with draft incentives, to make a potential deal for that salary range.
Mm.
So that would make a lot of sense, right? Now, the other rumor that Shams Charania reported on was Jimmy Butler. In the Miami Heat, I think Pat Riley's sick of Jimmy Butler. He is.
That, to me, is a red flag.
He's sick of Jimmy
Butler. Is it not?
Absolutely. And the Heat are open to listening to offers for Butler and making a deal if the proposal is right. Lee sources told ESPN. And he's open to destinations such as Houston and Dallas and the Golden State Warriors. Now, also, he's
him and Dylan native Brooks. Houston. That would be interesting.
So, who knows?
Are you in on Jimmy Butler?
No, I'm not on him. With the way the Warriors play, he's a ball stopper, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But he's a hell of a player. I'm not diminishing. Jimmy Butler's a hell of a player.
He's old.
And I'd be open to it, but
it's too
he's 35, 36.
Old.
What's his three-point percentage?
He doesn't really shoot threes.
Yeah, well.
He does get to the free throw line.
In the playoffs, he hits threes. In the playoffs, he turns into a different player. But you got to get through the regular season to get through the Western Conference.
He's the reverse Jimmy Garoppolo?
Oh, taking a shot at Jimmy.
Well, it's just, you know.
Jimmy Butler, 19 points a game, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. He's actually shooting this year 36% from 3.
He's taking 2 a game?
He is taking less than 2 a game.
Okay.
Last year he shot 41%, taking 2.5. I'm looking here. Wow, he's a lifetime 33%. So, Warrior fans, you open to a trade or you want to ride with JK? Do you want to ride with this roster right now? Now, Dennis Schroeder, I'm all in for it because you can use Melton's slot.
Yes, I would agree.
So, I'm cool with that. Maybe you can sign Melton in the offseason. No hard feelings whatsoever, but business is business. We're trying to get back into the playoffs here. I'm all for Dennis Schroeder because they do need another playmaking guard.
Absolutely.
They're missing that tremendous. That's the big hole right now.
I'm reluctant.
Playmaking guard.
I'm reluctant to trade Kuminga currently. And again, I've fluctuated. I've gone back and forth. But currently, I feel like he's hitting his stride and finding his zone. It has to be a blow-away, knock-it-out type of a deal. And I'm just not willing to do that right now.
Nah,
and I don't think the Jimmy Butler even comes close to slow. Okay, hypothetically, you add Jimmy Butler. It's
going
to cost you more than Kuminga.
Yeah.
You're going to probably have to attach Wiggins. Are we sure?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'm not doing that.
Well, but you got to have the salaries match. Like, and this is a guy who also wants a salary extension at 35, 36 years old. I'm good off that.
Yeah, I am.
There's a lot of wear and tear.
Cousin Nick back in June. Oh, when did we have Cousin Nick on? Was I out? Was he on with us? Who was he on with? Here's his thoughts on Butler and the Warriors.
Jimmy Butler's name has popped up in the conversation of rumors, and would the Warriors give him the money and the contract he wants? I think it is a fit on paper, but having covered Jimmy long enough, one, I'm not exactly sure how he fits into that locker room as the alpha personality that he is. And two, I don't know if after all the wear and tear on his knees, especially over the last few years, if you're the Warriors, if you want to give him that type of extension, that would scare the hell out of me, because I think if you could say, all right, well, Jimmy's going to be healthy and he's going to play in the postseason and he's going to pair with Steph, great. But nobody can say that because he's missed a lot of time over the last few seasons.
He hit him with the Max Dre.
Something me and Cousin Nick agree on.
It's a bonus agreement?
To bonus agreement. I mean, I can't get over the bonus championship. I just, it's one of the most disrespectful things I've ever heard said from a reporter. Just call it, but I'm going to move off of that. 559 saying Robert Williams from Portland. Yeah, I'm in on him.
There are lesser deals on paper that I think can help the Warriors in a variety of ways differently.
You don't need a star. I don't think the Warriors necessarily need a superstar to make noise in the Western Conference. Just look at the Dallas Mavericks. Now, they had Luka, and he's in his prime. He's entering his prime, or if he's in his prime, Kyrie Irving not too far off of his prime. He's still a special, special player. Steph Curry, probably not in his prime, but damn, he's still one of the 10, 15 best players in this league. There's no doubt.
Let's say Draymond Green's playing. What do you think, 96, 97% of his prime?
Yeah, he's still.
But excellent. he's still, we all acknowledge.
Slowing down a little bit as a guard.
Yeah, a little.
And don't tell Steph Curry that because he's going to look at us with a side eye. And
I'm not trying to be
I'm just saying, I'm trying to
acknowledge the reality. Like LeBron, if LeBron was 100%, currently maybe he's 91%. But again, LeBron at 91% is better than 95% of the league.
So when I look at deals, and Dallas, they laid the blueprint for today's NBA with all the salary cap and the first apron, second apron, tax purposes. They traded for P.J. Washington and Daniel Gafford. They're able to advance to the NBA Finals with two little subtle moves that completed their team.
Caught lightning in a bottle, played really good basketball.
Yep, and I still think they're right now they're playing well, too. They've won seven in a row, and they're a factor in the Western Conference. Because Luka's going to win you a game, Kyrie's going to win you a game. You bring in Klay Thompson, you got the bigs, Lively. They're a really good team. The Warriors, by making some subtle moves like Dennis Schroeder and Robert Williams, oh my gosh. Oh my Lord. Now we're cooking with hot grease. Those are the type of moves that I think you can make. Now, can Robert Williams stay healthy? That's a big key with him because he's a hell of a big, but Boston had to give up on him.
Yeah.
They had to. He couldn't stay healthy for him. But if you could stay healthy and you play him 10 to 15 minutes a game, especially with TJD, seems like he's out of the rotation as of now until he finds it. Currently, he's out of rotation. Yeah. And that flips with Steve Kerr.
Yeah, it's a long season. And there's going to be matchups where they'll need
him. But Kevon Looney's playing excellent basketball, and he's a winner. He's a winner.
So if you could add, like, let's say it's not one of these superstar names.
Dennis Schroeder and Robert Williams are right up my alley.
So I'm kind of, well, I would like to, I mean, I don't think this guy's available, but if you could poach Trey Murphy out of New Orleans.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, that would be the type of move.
Well, Trey Murphy the third is special, and they're going to blow it up in New Orleans.
You think that's for sure?
I mean, Brandon Ingram's gone.
Now, right? He's got a big ankle. That's a name I'd love to have, wouldn't it?
Trey Murphy, I didn't tell you the pre-draft story about Trey Murphy.
No, tell me
Trey Murphy the third, pre-draft story.
Wait a minute.
Quiet down. The king has something to say. Your majesty, could you please tell us a king's tale from your travels across the realm? Oh, the king's tale. What is the king's tale?
I didn't vote for you.
What's that last part saying?
I didn't vote for you.
King's tale. Trey Murphy the third. When he was in the draft, and he was in the same draft class with Jonathan Kaminga and Moses Moody. Oh, don't you worry about that.
Don't you worry about where I got the intel from.
Well, definitely got the intel.
Little birds were talking.
Trusted agent. A trusted agent, as Jim Harbaugh would say.
Uh-huh.
Trey Burford III was out here for the pre-draft workouts.
Okay.
He was out here for like 3 days. And they said the guy stayed in the gym. And there's some disagreements. Some people was like, man, we got to get this Trey Murphy the third kid. They selected Moses Moody out of Arkansas. We don't know how good Moses Moody is yet. Right now, he's hurt with the knee injury. He's uncertain to play tomorrow. But Trey Murphy the third, there are people in that organization that love this guy. Loved Trey Murphy the
third. I love when these things come out after a player has proven to be very good. I'm not saying that you're wrong. What I'm saying is like I love when like nobody wants to take credit for the Moody pick.
Everyone
wants to take credit for I knew Trey Murphy would be good.
But no. People told me this shortly after that draft. They told me this shortly after that.
I brought it up a couple times.
You just don't be listening to me. You guys are worried about everything.
It's tough to keep up.
So I had to bring it up again. But a few months after that draft, some people was like, oh, it's Trey Murphy the third kid. Look out for him. This guy was in our gym shooting. This guy's legit. So, yeah, would we like Trey Burford III? Yeah, that's probably too good to be true.
Did he get extended?
He did get extended. But it was the contracts, but don't
leave
he
it to me.
Because I know Love is, he's chilling. He's ready to get on the microphone.
Well, it is his birthday.
It is?
Yeah.
You know what? It is his birthday. I forgot. Lucas Alexander texted us yesterday. He said, hey, just in case you want to do something for Sam Lovin, it's his birthday. Maybe we'll go out for breakfast. We want to get a bite to eat after the show. I got time. I got time today. But I was like, man, let's get a special guest on for this guy. And Lucas said, we're working on it. And I haven't heard from him since. So, sorry.
No idea who that could be. But.
Yeah, I try to get Michael Irvin. I try to get A. Reed. I try
Those guys aren't going to say.
We can get FP on. Trey Murphy
He's definitely not going to say yes.
He signed a 4-year, $112 million contract.
4 years, $112 million deal. Yeah. How much? How was the AAV
on
that?
And when does that kick in?
This year it kicks in. So $25 million cap hit this year, $27 the following.
Melton Moody.
Yeah, check that. So this starts, this kicks in next year.
Okay.
So $25 million next year. The year after is 27, then 29, then 31.
I would surrender a future first round pick for Trey Murphy.
Oh, they're going to want a lot for that. You would have to think.
I mean, how many firsts?
This guy's a 3-and-D guy. He is fetch. In 559, saying the Pelicans most likely give up Herb Jones. Herb Jones is a hell of a defender, too. A little inconsistent from the 3-point line.
They have
but I like Herb Jones. I like Herb Jones a lot. Trey Murphy, if there's anybody on the Pelicans I want, it's Trey Murphy the third. Now, 408 saying, hey, I would take Naz Reid over Trey Murphy the third. You know how I feel about Naz Reid. You know how I feel about Naz Reid. Man, could you pry him out of Minnesota? Damn, that would be a haul. But, look, they definitely need, I think the Warriors need one more piece. And Schroeder for Melton and the pick seem like it's doable.
So you're
it's
done, realistic. You're done shopping for the superstar?
Yeah, I've unless it's Giannis, like I, you know me, I same position. Paul George, I'm out on that.
Yeah.
Lauri Markkanen, I was out on that.
I don't consider him a superstar.
Some people do.
That's fine.
He got paid like a superstar.
Sure.
You know, $238 million.
Got to pay somebody.
So, you know, I'm Dennis Schroeder, a Robert Williams, a Vucevic from Chicago.
I like
a little subtle move, yeah. a little subtle move like that. You don't need a star. I got Steph Curry. I got Draymond Green. If I keep Andrew Wiggins and I can keep Kuminga, now we're cooking with hot grease, man. I'm telling you, they're close. They're close. And I think Dunleavy and Lakeup, they're working these lines, man.
They're really working these lines. You know, you played that long cut from Draymond about Kuminga.
Yeah.
God, I appreciated how much he had to, like, shoehorn in there. I mean, I view myself as a starter in the NBA. I am a starter in the NBA. It's just, it's so funny how the currency, like, it matters to these guys so much.
It does matter. It does matter. But look at Steve Kerr, man. Look at the championships they won. How many times has he tinkered with the starting lineup in the NBA Finals alone?
Well, yeah, and they were lucky that guys bought in. Not all those teams. Well,
when you win.
Yeah, exactly.